Welcome to the Awaken Podcast. At Awaken Church, we are passionate about wrestling with and being unraveled by the Christian scriptures. Ideally, we do this together around the table in the neighborhood of Bowness. As we see it, Jesus has invited all of us to encounter him in a diverse community and participate with him in a mission of loving our neighbors.
Well, we are halfway through our series that is about the incarnation and about our response to this kind of Advent proclamation that we were just making leading up to Christmas, that God is with us and God is with us tangibly in the flesh. And so one of the ways that we respond to this claim we dare to make is to say that making promises and keeping them matters and is something that we do as a response to the incarnation. And so this is a wild thing to think about for me, making promises and keeping them. Okay, so today I wore a pair of shoes. You can't see them on Zoom. I'm literally gonna show you the shoe of shame. There's a story, well, there's a million little stories, but this shoe captures a part of my personality very well. And anyone in person now knows I'm wearing two different color socks, but it's all connected. The chaos that spins, Brueggemann calls it. I bought these shoes about 10 months ago at a store in the mall. They were about $20. And I just saw them, and they were cheap, and they were cool. And they had mismatched laces that glowed in the dark. Glue in the dark. Glue in the dark. That makes a lot of sense, glue in the dark. They glowed in the dark. And I wore them. And I, because they were so cheap, they cost me nothing. And just my chaotic personality, I didn't treat them very well. I would wear them in mud puddles. Like when you buy shiny white shoes, most people probably avoid puddles. But I bought them in the spring when there's like melting snow and mud everywhere and sloshing through puddles. And one day I was like, oh, I should wash these laces, which is probably the most care I've ever given to something that I own that is, you know, textile. But I lost the laces in the washing machine or something, or the kids found them and then tied them together to make a trap for monsters, I don't know, in the backyard. And so I threw them in the garbage. And then David saw them in the garbage, and he's like, Nikayla, you just bought these. What are you doing? I'm like, well, I lost the laces, so yeah. What am I going to do? And he just kind of massages this part on his forehead, like, what? So he goes and finds like an old pair of shoes with laces and laces them, and he's like, they're perfectly good shoes. I'm like, yeah, but they were only $20. That was my attitude, was like, I can just go get another pair. Who cares? And he, there's so many stories like that between Dave and I. Like, David, you'd think he grew up in the war because he like takes very good care. He will darn his socks and repair holes, and I always used to kind of be like, we have places to be, why are you taking so much time? But preparing the sermon, I was like, wisdom. I remember one time when we were dating, I don't know how our relationship lasted, but I had just bought, again, like a $10 pair of shoes. They were like leather and slip-on, and I thought they were cool, and it was summertime, and we were hanging out, and I had just bought them, and he thought they were cool, and oh, they look so good, cool. And we were going down to his house. His parents lived on the river, the elbow. And we were throwing rocks for his dog and sticks, and his dog would retrieve them and bring them back, the sticks. And at one point, we got the idea to go for a walk, and we had to cross the river. So he gets down and starts taking off his shoes and his socks. And I just like sloshed through the river with my shoes on. And I did it so quickly, I didn't even think about it. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm taking off my shoes and my socks to cross the river. Oh. He's like, you just bought those shoes. But I was like, yeah, but they were like $10. Like the idea was like, it doesn't matter. I'll just get new ones when they wear out. And they were like kind of that, the store says vegan leather, which is like petroleum byproduct. But water is not good for the shoe. And it just drove him nuts that I would do this. And you'll see this in our house, the way I load the dishwasher and like try and force it to shut, because I just don't care, because I'm a renter, I'm not a homeowner, and it's the landlord's like when I say this out loud, I'm like, wow, this is bad. I can see why David is always doing this. you know, I buy a car, but I've never bought a car that I had to make payments on. I just get a cheap car on Kijiji. And then if I make a mess, like somehow it's just like, because I didn't pay very much for this, it doesn't matter, so I don't take care of it. And I was, I often make this joke when family members or friends come to visit us in Bowness. They drive down and they're like, okay, you know, I'm like, yeah, we're right on the train tracks, the house with the most dandelions. And it's true, on 69th Street, which is huge, and a bunch of awakeners live on that street, our yard is the worst. And although when you drive down that street, you'll see, one of the jokes we've made is like, you can tell who's a homeowner and who's a renter based on the amount of dandelions. Because I think a renter is like, I don't care, that's the landlord's problem. And the homeowner is like tending to and caring for that lawn and, you know, making sure it looks nice and that it's healthy and flourishing. But if you're a renter, you're prone to just not care. I have a neighbor I've met as a result of COVID. She's an elderly lady, lives on her own. She's just the most wonderful, lovely human. And she's lived in Bowness for decades. And I said to her, like, do you think you'll live, like, how long do you think you'll live in Bowness? Like, do you ever want to leave Bowness? And she was like, oh no, I'll die here. And her attitude was like, this is where I live. I don't think of life in terms of where I'll go next. This is where I live. This is my home. And if you drive down 69th Street any day in the month of May, you will see a little old lady tending to every little piece of soil. And she has the most flowers of any yard on all of Bowness, on all of 69th Street. I don't know about all of Bowness, but her garden is beautiful. And I think there's something to be said. When you live there and you're committed to the place and you're rooted there, you might take better care of that space. She has what you might call commitment, which is something I am just learning. I'm learning that the more you spend, the more something costs you, the more prone you'll be to take care of it. And as I start thinking about all the things in my life that I own that cost me very little, things I bought for cheap, things that I don't care of, I got doing some research and I discovered, and there's some really disturbing slides, did you know that people like me who buy cheap clothes and then throw them out as soon as they get worn out, apparently 70 pounds is how much clothing and shoes the average person throws away every year, which adds up to 13 million tons of textile waste that goes in a landfill, 95% of which is perfectly good. It could be recycled or used, made into new clothing, or it could have just been kept and taken better care of, and it would have been perfectly fine. But I just don't come from a generation that buys a sweater and says, this is the last sweater I'll ever buy, and then takes good care of it forever. I say, this is very trendy for spring of 2021. They say that a garbage truck, there's a few slides here, I think there's three you can see, a garbage truck full of textiles, so clothing and shoes, is emptied into a landfill once per second. So because we don't commit to care for our things, we don't sacrifice for our things, we often just don't really take care of it. We're transient. We just move through life like, I don't need this anymore, I don't care. And maybe you're more like David, or maybe you're more like me, I don't know. But I realize as an Old Testament scholar, this is very disturbing to me, because the theme of covenant in the Bible, covenant means that you pay a lot for something and then you commit to care for it forever. And what do I know of covenant? I used to teach my students that a covenant was just a contract, you know. Any legally binding contract is a covenant. But upon further reflection, that's actually not true. A contract is something that you enter into and your motivation is to just get the most out of it for the least cost to you personally. Like when you buy something on Kijiji, you negotiate with the seller because you want to pay as little as possible and you want the best possible thing. So a contract is about you. A contract is get me the most bang for my buck. Whereas a covenant is the opposite. It says, I will give all of myself to this. I will give my whole self to this. I believe in this, and this is for my good and for the good of the other person in this covenant. You don't enter into a covenant with the person you bought shoes from on Kijiji. You bargain, you talk them down. Well, they look kind of worn out. I don't think they're worth 20 bucks. I'll give you 10. And then they end up in the landfill a couple months later. But a covenant is a bigger thing. And I love the idea of covenant in the Hebrew Bible because when we think of a covenant or a contract, we in our rhetoric say to sign on the dotted line. But in the Hebrew, you say that you cut a covenant. The word covenant in Hebrew and the word cut always go together. So you don't make a covenant, you cut a covenant. And what they would often do in the ancient world is there'd be some kind of animal involved, like maybe a little rabbit. Like if I said to Rod, can I borrow $1,000? And you were like, okay, but you have to pay me back by July. Like, okay, I promise. And so enter into this covenant with Rod. I would take a rabbit or a dove or something and I would cut it and it would die. And the idea is that I cut this covenant with you. May what happened to this rabbit happen to me if I do not hold up my end of this covenant. So it's a little bit bloody, a little bit violent of a metaphor, but the idea was that it's forever, it's eternal, it's written in blood. A covenant, it makes you vulnerable. It's about risking your whole self. And so I might not make a covenant for $1,000. It would just be too big of a risk. But perhaps I would for something more. And so the very first covenant that you see in the Bible is a covenant God makes with Noah with the rainbow. And the rainbow, it's not meant to just be like this beautiful thing that says the rain has stopped. It's also, in the Hebrew imagination, shaped like an archer's bow pointing at God's self, that God is cutting a covenant with Noah. See? And he points the weapon to himself. I promise you. I won't do this again. And so that bow is pointed straight at God. Every time it stops raining, everyone says, oh yeah, I remember now. God put himself on the line and we are safe. Well, the next covenant that you see in scripture is a covenant God made with Abraham. And there's some very literal cutting in that that covenant. I did not try and find a photo related specifically to the covenant, but it's the covenant of circumcision. Where you literally cut the covenant in your flesh and you say, God, I know that it's not because of anything I've ever done or any strength I have within me that you are a God that keeps your promises. In fact, I'm going to cut off a part of my own body that says I know it's not about what my body can do. And so God makes this covenant with Abraham, with the stars. He's kind of looking at the stars like, listen, I promise you, it feels like nothing could be further from the truth to a man who is homeless and childless, but one day you will have a place to call home for your numerous, numerous children, and it will be a place where I will be at home with you. And then the third covenant, and the last one I'll talk about until the communion table, spoiler alert, is the biggest covenant in the Old Testament is the one that God made with Moses and with the whole nation of people who were emancipated from the house of slavery. On Mount Sinai, God says, I will be your God and you will be my people. It's this covenant of relationship where God says, I'm going to go with you. I'm going to put my roots down here with you. I will be your God and you will be my people. I will be at home with you and you will be at home with me. And the sign of this covenant is not a covenant in the flesh like circumcision or a covenant in the sky like the rainbow. The sign is the Sabbath day, which is a covenant cut in time. Once a week and one day all week, we will be at home with one another and there will be rest. And so this covenant in God, he says, you are not a cheap pair of shoes to me. When you wear out, and you will, when you break, and you will, when pieces of you go missing, and they will, I will not throw you away. The church is God's home, not his rental. He says, I bought you. I'm all in. I will die here. I will be your God. I will go with you. I will never leave you nor forsake you. It's the last thing Jesus says in Matthew's gospel. I will never leave. I will never forsake you. My roots will go down here. There is a passage in the book of Ezekiel, And what I love about this Ezekiel passage is that I think of the shoes that I throw out all the time or the jackets I throw out all the time. In fact, this sweater is David's, and as I was running out of the house, he's like, whoa, 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 hold up, that's my jacket. And he's every right to be concerned because he knows that when I leave the house with one of his pairs of clothing, he might never see it again. Or it might not return in its full, beautiful form. And he takes very good care. So he's like, I was like, don't worry, I'm giving a sermon. I promise I'll take care of this sweater. But when I think of our God as a God who doesn't just throw away things when they get difficult, but he repairs, I think of this passage in Ezekiel 36. He says, I will sprinkle clean water on you. And in fact, sometimes with this particular passage in Ezekiel 36, I like to think of a mother bathing her sticky child who's been playing out in the mud all day, irreparably covered in mud. And this loving mother says, I will sprinkle clean water on you, and you will be clean. I will cleanse you from all your impurities and from all your idols. I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. I will remove from you the heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. I will put my spirit in you and move you to follow my decrees and be careful to keep my laws. Then you will live in the land I gave your ancestors, and you will be my people, and I will be your God. I'm going to take care of you. You're going to mess up. You're going to get dirty. You're going to get broken. You're going to get hard-hearted, but I will continue to cleanse you and wash you and bring you back, because this is the kind of promise that God has made, and this is the promise that God keeps. As a gardener, the great gardening God calls us to put down roots, to commit, to be a people who know the power of promises kept. There's a passage where Jesus says, sell everything you own and follow me. Put roots down. It's a huge cost. If you make a promise that costs you nothing, you're not very likely to keep it. If you make a promise that costs you everything, you would be. And so this call to put your roots down deep, to graft ourselves into the great vine. On one hand, it's so simple. If we could be a people who made promises and kept them, if we could be a people who made costly promises, there wouldn't be so many landfills in the world. To make a promise and keep it would be a simple way of stopping climate change. We would waste less. We would throw less stuff away. We would buy less cheap stuff. We would care about where what we own comes from. I was thinking today, Kim Goodman, she sews a lot of clothing. She makes clothing. And I've seen a pair of jeans made by Kim and how amazing they are and how perfect they are. And I'm like, boy, if I had a pair of jeans made by Kim, you bet I would stitch up any hole or patch any knee, because the love that would go into someone making you something, the amount of sacrifice, the I think Kim is making a grad dress for some of an awakened grade 12 student. And I guarantee that dress will not end up in the landfill. So just, I could speak kind of theoretically and spiritually, but the simple fact of the matter is that people who commit to something are, that would be a humanity that wouldn't destroy the earth as we do. Neighborhoods would be flourishing more, because how many folks like me just rent and we treat our neighborhood like just a stop on the journey, just some place I'm gonna live here for a while. It just happens to be where I am, but I'm not committed to it. And I think, I'm not very old. If I actually sat down with David and said, David, we are going to die in Bowness. This is where we will live for the rest of our life. Suddenly, I would be like, someone should deal with these dandelions, and someone ought to paint that fence, and someone ought to fix that. And boy, we could use some more trees in this part of the neighborhood. I would want to add beauty. I would want this to be a place where I call home. But because I often see myself as just someone without roots passing through, I say, I don't care. And I could even make derogatory jokes and say, oh, it's just Bowness. But what would the neighborhoods of the world look like if the people who lived there said, this is where my roots will go down? What about our relationships, our friendships with one another? It's so easy to just block and delete. It's so easy to say, yeah, doesn't work, to just move on. David and I, you all know this, we've had a lot of hard times in our marriage where staying committed to each other is a struggle, and it's been amazing how at the end of it, we say, yet you hurt me, yet this is broken, and we could throw it away. Or we could sit and tangle our roots together in the soil of this great love and commit and see it through. And so we have to regularly recommit ourselves to a covenant that we entered into more than a decade ago. So what promises do we make that are costly? Marriage, weddings, we say vows till death do us part. There's not a lot of other ways that we make big commitments to each other in our culture, in our generation even. Sometimes we do baby dedications, which is a way of sort of saying, this community is the community I promise to raise my children in, and a community that I trust. This is the village that will raise my child. We enter into the covenant with baptism. It's a public way of saying, I cut ties with all of the things of this world I've pledged allegiance to, and now my allegiance here is to the work of Christ in me and these people. But I was like, what other costly covenants do we make? I just read this week that Gandhi made a promise, a commitment to read the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5-7, and apparently, I don't know if you'd call it a legend, probably not, it's just a beautiful thing. Gandhi read the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5-7, twice a day for the last 40 years of his life. St. Francis took an oath of poverty, and because the Bible says you cannot love both God and money, St. Francis swore an oath to never touch money. And he didn't. Once he entered that oath until he died, his hands did not touch a coin or a bill. So he said, if I can only love God or money, I hate money. And he renounced it and lived this life of simplicity and poverty, a costly oath to make. I have a friend named Teresa. She comes to morning prayers. Some of you know her. And she told me when she was 16, she made a promise to read the Bible every day, as like an innocent kind of 16-year-old might say. And she says, it's been a long time since she was 16, but she's stuck to it. It's just a promise she made. And lastly, I'll share, I met a couple, two people who do counseling for churches. I met early this fall, and the one fellow was a pastor for a long time and a theology professor in Toronto. And he told me a story when he was a young pastor, just starting out, he asked an older man in his church if he would pray for him. And he just said it like casually, like, oh, would you please pray for me? Like, I'm having a hard time adjusting to this church. And he pastored there for like 10 years, whatever. Moved on, pastored somewhere else for 5 years, moved on, was a professor, whatever, whatever, whatever. And then like 30-some years later, that man who he had first commissioned to pray for him had passed away, died of old age. And at his funeral, he ended up meeting this man's son or grandson or someone close to him and was like, oh, hi, I'm so-and-so. And that child that who was now an adult said, you are so-and-so? My dad prayed for you every morning and every night for his entire life, and I've never even met you. And the idea was like, this fellow was asked to pray, and he prayed until his last day for that pastor. He took his oath seriously. And so we make promises to each other, and we make promises to each other that ought to cost us. I was like, oh, I'll put church membership as a thing, but church membership is just sort of for the government because we have money to spend. So church membership isn't really like a spiritual thing. But in a way it is, right? To say, this is my church family, and I know that every single person here is going to drive me nuts and bring great beauty into my life, and I'm going to have to negotiate between the challenge and the gift, and I could easily leave. Or I could stay like Christ and say, I'm committed to see this through. Living in community, Dave and I would often get disenchanted and be like, oh, this is dumb. We should leave and go start a new community. We'll just go somewhere else and find better people. I think Vancouver Island, that's where the good a good community is, right? Like, oh, it's got to be an eco-village. Like, no, this dumb community house we have here with these people that we've been living with day in, day out, they're all bad. we're going to go find an eco-village where people have their crap together. And we did that. And we've done that living in Bowness. We've been like, oh, this is too frustrating. This is too much. Let's leave and go find a new church. And it's always like in Vancouver. That's always where we think it will be. It's one reason why I've really kind of lamented COVID-19. And there's many things to lament in my own personal pastoral opinions. Don't even make it in the list of top 50, I'm sure. But a lot of churches kind of pre-record a service and then just post the YouTube link, you know, watch the YouTube when you can. I'm like, oh, that'd be a lot easier. But I just feel like that's like we're creating a consumer culture where you just watch. And if it's entertaining, great. If it's not, you just change the channel to a different church. And it costs you nothing to click the link. Nobody has to see you. Nobody has to realize how hard you are to love and then give you the gift of choosing to love you anyway. You can just watch, and if it gets boring, change the channel. Says, I don't want to do that. I don't want to be a person that says, this will do for now, but I could move on anytime. I want to hear the words of Jesus who said, count the cost. In Luke 14, he tells a story. He says, you have to count the cost if you want to follow me. It's costly. You can't just change the channel. What kind of a person starts building a house and doesn't count the cost? You put down the foundation and then what? You start off to war, but you didn't count the cost and you only get a few kilometers from town. If you want to finish this with me, you got to count the cost. It's going to cost a lot. But the good thing is when something costs a lot, you're going to care for it. And ours is a world overrun with cheap consumerism. Unrooted people that throw everything away. We throw away our shoes. We trash the house that we're renting. We move on from family members. We move on from friendships. We just move on because we are rootless. We are displaced. So I think to myself, awaken church, Advent, God is with us in the flesh. So what? What do we do? It could be so simple as imagining us a church with roots, a church committed to fix the broken things instead of throwing them away, a church that makes space for confession and repentance and forgiveness, a church that says, let's fix this broken thing. Let's clean this thing that got a stain on it. Let's darn these socks. Let's be a church that cares for the soil, that participates in the slow rhythm of sorrow and mercy and abundance. A church that doesn't frantically move around searching for consumers willing to purchase the cheap product we've put together, tossed to and fro on the waves of the ever-changing cravings of our famished world. A church that is anchored deep into this love, this faithfulness of our covenanting God. I always kind of poke fun at students a little bit, usually just in their first year, because there's this Bible verse in Philippians that everybody has written on their sneakers or their backpack. Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And they think that means like, I can become a champion basketball player. I can become a world famous preacher. I can, I don't know, fill in the blank, become a very successful CEO. But when you back up in Philippians 4, where Paul writes that, he says, I will put my roots down here, and if I get handed famine, if I get handed abundance, if I get handed persecution, if I get handed love, whatever I endure in this place, I can endure it because I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. It's a statement about the strength that Christ gives us to make promises and keep them. So to be a church that believes if there is a God, if there is a creator, that God must be a covenanting God, a long-suffering God, a faithful and patient God, a rooted God. And we imagine that church put down roots where that God is and put them down deep. And though the winds blow against us, though the storms come, though sometimes things break like shoes and appliances and human hearts, we meet the faithfulness of God here. We sell everything we own in one way or another, and though our faith be like a tiny mustard seed, we commit, we make promises, and we keep them. And so I think our world needs a God who makes promises and keeps them. And our world needs a peculiar people that make costly promises and see it through. To one another, to place, to something as simple as the clothing that we bought and own, the meal that we make. I deleted my section on how much food we throw out every year. I didn't need to rant, but to commit, you know, buy an apple, I'm going to eat this apple, and I'm going to be grateful for it. I made a friend, I'm going to commit and care for this friendship, and it will sometimes challenge me, but I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And so, essentially, there's nothing more to say except to sort of point to the communion table and the strongest expression of the fidelity of God. The strongest expression of our God's desire for us to be grafted into that fidelity is the communion table, where Christ cuts a covenant in his own blood and says, "This is for the forgiveness of sins. An eternal covenant written in my blood. I am with you, I am with you, I am with you. I will die here." The covenant table, I mean the communion table, is the place where broken things aren't tossed away, broken things aren't neglected, forgotten about. It's the table where God says, "With brokenness I make all things new." And so we make promises to each other, and we keep them because our God is with us. I'm going to invite Rod up to lead us in communion. And yeah, Jill will help with breakout rooms when that time has come. So.
Thanks, Nikayla. Yeah, we come to this table regularly. Here we do it almost every week. And I chose the wrong shirt today. I should have brought one that I've had for like 20 years. This one's brand new. I got it as a gift at Christmas. I'll likely have it when it goes out of style, but it's a bit of a reminder of the journey that Jolene and I have been on. And we too have had some struggles. A year ago, we were actually not living together. We had a 4-month separation. And it was one of those moments where there was a lot of broken, a lot of hurt. And we had to make that decision. Like, is this something that it's now time, like our culture, to just throw it aside? We also fantasize about it's got to be easier somewhere else. Grass is always greener. And we, with a lot of therapy and courage, we worked it through, and we've got back together. And I share that story a little bit to kind of just bring it back to this table, because we can get a little bit infatuated, and I think we sometimes do in the evangelical church, with our brokenness. And we come to this table as a rehearsal of that brokenness. And I don't think that's ever been the intention that that Christ set up, was for us to rehearse our brokenness. The restoration, the life, the flourishing is what Jesus had in mind. And so I remember going through seminary and kind of discovering just the joy, the party, the celebration that is this table, getting super frustrated with how I was trained to be real kind of somber and solemn. And I know that's a practice and that's maybe important for you, but I want to add to this table that there is this celebration of the fact that Christ is the beginning and the end. I think, Logan, you cracked me up when you sang that line in the song. Just this idea that there's a perpetual life-giving energy that is the divine, and that is there for us to kind of participate. And let's think about the verses. On the night that Jesus was betrayed. On the night that Jesus was done with, discarded, blocked, deleted. On the night that Jesus was betrayed is where this story, where this ceremony, where this sacrament takes place. On the night that Jesus was betrayed, and when you think of that, I hope what you think about is your capacity as a human person living in the world today to anchor so deep into your own sense of self, into the sense of God, your connection with the divine, that you too, in a moment of betrayal, in a moment of hurt, in a moment of rejection, that's my big one, in a moment of pain, you too can say, this is my body, I'm here, I'm not going anywhere, I'm not going to discard this moment. And so on the night that Jesus was betrayed, he took the cup, or took the bread actually first, and with it he broke it. And we're reminded that broken things can be made new. He also took the cup and he said, this is my blood. I've cut a covenant. I'm here. You are my home. You're not my rental.